Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast. I'm Alison Perry and you're listening to episode 27. Today on the podcast, I've got author and blogger Matt Coyne as my guest. A dad of one, Matt's life changed pretty much overnight when a Facebook post that he wrote about being a new dad went viral. People like Ashton Kutcher were sharing the post, and as a result, he was offered a book deal to write more about his life as a dad. Dummy was published the following year in 2017. It's just come out in paperback and Matt continues to post on his Facebook page Man vs Baby and his blog too. Matt's brand of humour and his take on parenting brings so much light, relief and support to parents. And in this episode, we talk a little bit about how that makes him feel and also what it was like to be a stay-at-home dad. And keep listening to the end of the episode to hear Matt's most embarrassing parenting moment, which is priceless. Welcome, Matt, to the podcast.
Thank you.
This is serious. Come on. Serious faces, serious podcast.
Okay, go.
Matt Coyne, yes. You're a dad of one to Charlie.
Correct.
He's age two.
He is, yeah. Two and a half.
We were just talking before we started recording about how it's so important to get the 2.5 or 2¾ in with children.
Yeah, whereas nobody does care though, do they?
No.
People. That's one of those questions that people ask that's kind of like a polite inquiry, sort of, how are you? They don't really want to know how you are.
No,
they don't
not.
Want loads of detail about how you're fine, but your brother Malcolm's going to the hospital to have the camera up. They don't want loads of detail. So.
They don't want, yeah, my child is 2 and 3 months and 2 weeks and 5 days.
Yeah. You've got to stop it at some point anyway, because the point at which they go to university, you can't be saying they're still 378 weeks, 4 days. And
yeah, some people do cling
hours.
On to that, though, don't they? They say that their child is 24 months old, and it's like, that's two! They're two!
Yeah, they're just sheer maths, though.
I think some people like really cling on to the baby days, though. And if you're still counting
that,
in
though,
months,
yeah.
Then it means that you've practically got a newborn still.
The only people who ask you, really, are if an old lady stops you in the supermarket,
yeah.
Or whatever. And yeah, so. That's like a maths question, though, then, when someone just fires at you, how old's your kid? I have no idea.
It's not just a maths question, it's a moral question, because if you're a good dad, you will know how old your son is.
Are you a better parent than if you are able to break it down into hours, days and weeks?
Probably, I imagine so. But either way, that old lady's going to judge you for something. If not that, then some other thing, like what you have in your shopping trolley, like the sugary kid snacks you've got in there. It's a minefield.
They're judging the shit out of me. But I'm guesstimating his age all the time, if anybody asks me. I mean, even the half years, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
I try and get away with, he's under six-ish.
Yes. You should say, I don't know, he's not even mine.
Yeah.
Listen, this is all well and good, but I haven't even asked my first question yet. So, you know, what I was going to say was, for anyone who's not aware of you and your work, can you tell us a bit more about yourself?
My work.
Your work. Your body of work.
My body of work. So I'm Matt Coyne, the creator of Man vs Baby, which is a blog, a parenting blog from sort of a dad's point of view. And also the author of Dummy, which is the book based on the parenting blog.
And you have a huge following on Facebook, don't you? How many have you got on Facebook?
Yeah, a couple hundred thousand on Facebook.
Just
it's quite a lot.
100,000. You're so casual.
I don't know them all. They don't come around my house or anything. Although I could probably invade somewhere if they all turned up.
Yeah, the power.
Not
you
anywhere
have.
Good. Luxembourg, somewhere
maybe,
like that.
Maybe an Aldi shop or something.
I know. Did you see that on the little one?
Yeah,
they
yeah.
They tore it down. Unbelievable. Yeah.
Not good. Yeah, that wasn't you, was it?
It may have been some of my followers, to be fair. They're that kind of people.
Are they? But how did it all start? So is it true that you, I mean, I'm saying is it true? I read this in your book, so I know it's true.
Not necessarily.
You tell me if it's true then. So you just posted on your personal Facebook page, yeah. Is that right? A post that ended up going viral.
That's how it started. So basically... you know when you first have a baby and you get loads of messages and people saying well wishes and all that sort of stuff, you get loads of them when you first have a baby. And I thought, I can't really be asked to reply to them all at the same time, so I'll just write a single post to sort of family and friends. So when Charlie was about 3 months old, I finally sat down and started writing it in a shopping centre, just in a coffee shop. And it must have been cathartic or something, because I just kept on writing. It ended up being like 1,000 words.
Wow.
And, so I just posted it for family and friends. And then it's probably the following morning when I woke up and it had like 18 likes or something.
18?
And I was like, yeah, absolutely nailed that there. Like, that'd be a bit of parenting sus there.
This is the most popular thing you've ever done on social media.
No one listens to a word of that. I've actually gone back and looked at my feed sort of before. And it's like one like, two like, and it's always like my Auntie Pat or my mum. And nobody else ever responded to anything ever. I sometimes wonder why I was ever on Facebook before, because no one was listening. So, that was like 20 likes or something. And then I started getting like requests, friend requests from people I didn't know, and they were sort of saying, "We've seen this post, and we want to be able to share it, but we can't because you've set it to family and friends only." Mm. So I flicked the little widget or whatever. I'm not a techie.
I flicked
the widget, and set it to like so people could share it.
Public,
and
yeah.
It's like 10,000 within a couple of days, and then it went like 20,000, 30,000, and. The stats to come in, it's just been seen by 15 million people, that one. That
you
first
are
post.
Kidding.
Yeah. Isn't it nuts?
When was that, 2016?
2016, yeah. I don't know, 2015, 2016? 2016.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
2016.
That was 2 years ago, so if your son's two, then that would probably...
I don't even know how old he is.
But yeah, the truth's coming out.
I think it was 2016, but yeah.
Right, that's incredible.
I know, that's absolutely nuts.
And it's from that, you then thought, hang on a minute, I'm the voice of the people here. I'm the voice of dads. No, you thought there's something in this. I'm going to start a blog, did you?
Not really, no. So what happened then is some agent has just emailed me basically through my personal Facebook. On the comments, actually, they'd put, "Can you phone me, can you," whatever, on the comments of the post. So I thought, oh, yeah, I'll phone them. And they basically touted me around London. So they wheelbarrowed me down northerner from down into London and took me around loads of publishers. And basically, from the book deal.
Hang on, so just on the basis of
that one Facebook post,
you were touted around publishers.
Yeah.
That's mad.
I know, and it's stupid. What a bunch of idiots. They have no idea what they're doing.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and then, it was only after we'd signed a book deal that my agent said, you should start a blog because it'll give you practice for writing the actual thing, and they'll, it'll build a little bit of following around before the book's launched.
Yeah.
And so I set up Man vs. Baby after we'd done the book deal.
Wow. That's really, really cool. And actually, on your Facebook page, Man vs. Baby, it must bring so much like relief to parents who are, really feel like they're going through it with like sleep deprivation or, like those early stages of being a parent. So that even though to you it's like you're having a laugh and you're enjoying it, that must be pretty amazing that you're...
I hope it does. And you get it as well. I know you get loads of, feedback from people who you're almost helping by accident in a way. Mm. A lot of the stuff that you write, I know, it's similar to it, is you write because you sort of have to write it.
Yeah.
And I write thinking that it's going to be a I mean, it's not all just gag a minute stuff. Yeah. You know what I mean? But the response that you get is it does keep you wanting to do it. And it does make you it is surprising, that feedback that you get, that it does help people.
Does it take you by surprise? Do you almost every time do you kind of think, oh yeah, people are actually benefiting from this?
People are actually reading it. That surprises me all the time. I know it sounds daft, like, I mean, but it astonishes me all the time that people, the likes, the comments or whatever, like, you don't see them after a while in the same way. But when you get personal messages where people are saying, you know, they're struggling with all kinds of things, whether infertility or PND or whatever it is, like, I mean, it's humbling in a way that humbling's the wrong word for it. The humbling sounds like a wanky word for it, but it's incredibly touching. It's incredibly.
I don't think there is a way of describing that without sounding a bit wanky, though. No. But it is an amazing thing, and I think it's all right to sound a bit wanky with that kind of thing, because you're doing a really cool thing, and that's just what it is.
It makes me feel really good about the thing that I'm doing, and you'll know as well that you get enough shit from people that those moments could keep me going for the rest of my life, basically.
So speaking about the shit you get thrown at you, you do get quite a lot. And you seem to have turned it into a bit of an art form where you kind of anonymously publish comments or messages you get and the responses that you give them.
Sometimes the people who follow me go to great lengths to find out who the person is.
Really?
So I'll scrub out their name and the profile photo, and they still find them. I don't know how they do it. Like, I mean, so I try not to, because I'm not doing it to be cruel or anything. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, they started it, is all I'm saying. But yeah, I get in loads of trouble for that, because the perceived wisdom is never respond to trolls, basically. Yeah. But there's a great deal of material in that for me. So
some of the stuff you write just makes me laugh. I mean, you put some in your book as well, and I was looking at it this morning, and there was one where you wrote your gran as a response to something. And they were like, is that, you know, that's not very mature. And you were like, well, no, she is quite mature. It was just like the most infantile, but so funny.
There's a lot of that. Infantile's that's about where my level is.
That's your level.
But I get in loads of trouble from this for publishers.
Like,
loads. My editor he sent me emails that just say, no, in the subject line, because he's seen something that I posted to like trolls or whatever. Like, and he'd rather I didn't sort of respond at all. But that's partly because I did one. I've only deleted one, actually, and it was at his request. And he was probably right.
At the troll's request or your publisher's request?
No, the publisher's request.
Right.
And it was my editor, Alex, sorry, mate. But he told me about, basically what happened was, this guy had sent me it was quite an aggressive message. And it was, he basically said, you're not funny, you're not, or basically that was the gist of it. Without using all the expletives that he used.
Yeah.
You don't edit this though, do you?
I do edit it, but you're allowed to swear.
Okay, that's good. So he says, you're a fucking... But basically he says, you're a fucking arsehole, you're not as fucking funny as you fucking think you are, etc. FFF and all that sort of stuff. So it's quite aggressive. And so I took his profile photo off of his page and I photoshopped it so he had a penis for one arm and a lobster claw for the other. and I put back to him, hi, I've just taking your photograph and photoshopped it so you've got one arm that's a penis and one arm that's a lobster claw, and that's quite funny. And he went absolutely apeshit. He was gonna kill me and everything. I mean, fortunately he didn't he's American, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he's probably got a passport or whatever. I don't think he's gonna come to Barnsley anytime soon. But the problem with it was, I post that but that day my editor was giving a presentation to, like, Waterstones and all that sort of stuff.
Really?
About getting the... No, it's the supermarkets, actually, trying to get the book into supermarket
shops. And they pull up your profile, being all like, look what he's doing.
Yeah, pulled up the Mama's Baby profile, pulled up my personal profile, and they said, look, you know, kind of look at his stats and all that sort of stuff. And Alex says to me, he says, so I pulled over all this before, and he says, I've got all the great and good of all retailing or whatever, like. I mean, and he says, and behind me on the wall, it's like a 7 foot cock and balls because it's a massive screen behind him on the thing. And he literally left the meeting and phoned me and says, you need to take that down. So that's the only time I've ever deleted one. The rest of them are all up there for anybody to see. And I've actually had a couple of the trolls come back to me since. There was a guy a couple of weeks ago came back and I'd taken a piss a bit. I wasn't particularly harsh or whatever, but he came back and said, he said, thanks for that. You know, kind of sarcastic or whatever, like, you know what I mean? And I went back to him and I says, look, I'll take it down. I'm not bothered. I'm just taking piss.
Yeah.
And again, he'd started it, so it was fine. But he was lovely. You know what I mean? And and we had quite a long chat and that, like, I mean, he said he was just having a bad day that day and he wanted to take it out on somebody and he gave me a lot of grief. I said, it's fine, I'll take it down. He says, no, leave it up. So,
oh, good on him.
Yeah.
I guess that's the thing, though, isn't it? A lot of people just think you're almost like this faceless, you know, thing on the internet that if they are having a bad day, they can take it out on you. They don't actually think that you're a person who might retaliate.
I think they're sort of gobsmacked about the idea that I'd actually go back and say something. But the thing is, I'd only ever do that. I don't do it to like someone who comments or anything like that sort of stuff. But if they tag me in something, to me, they're kicked off the game, you know.
They're
or if they message me directly, then they're kicked off the game. And whatever comes their way is fine. And whatever comes back my way is fine. And I just treat it as a little bit of sport, really. But
that's all good. It's all fair. And so you mentioned that your book Dummy was published last year and it's out in paperback now, isn't it?
Yeah, came out last Thursday, I think, on paperback.
It'll be a few weeks ago by the time this comes out.
It came out ages ago.
It was months ago.
By the time you've edited all this shit, it came out last year.
And is it coming out in America as well?
Is
it a version of it or the same? Is it called Man vs. Baby in America?
Man vs. Baby in America. So they've it's quite similar. They've edited. There's certain things that we can't get away with saying in America that they're a lot more puritanical. They've edited quite a bit of swearing out of it.
Okay.
They've switched to arsehole for asshole. I don't know if that makes a massive amount of difference. But there's certain things as well. Also, there's like a post Weinstein approach to it as well, which seems to have. I don't even say seems to have changed the editing process for them. They specifically said it's changed the way.
Wow,
they edit
in what
things way? So if I use the word tits over it, if I turn around and say this gets on my tits,
yeah,
I'm not thinking.
You're not thinking of breasts.
I'm not anatomically.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Whereas they said that would have been fine maybe a year ago, but now it's not. That's kind of like almost aggressive now. Like,
that's really interesting.
So, and you have to kind of go with, they understand their own.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, the American market is different and we've got kind of little turns of phrases. Cause I did notice reading your book that your kind of northern, you know, way of speaking very much comes through. You can tell it hasn't been edited out, right? As other books you read, it's very much, I guess, like the Queen's English. Or
Yeah, I mean, when the proofreader stuff come back, they would query certain things and like the spelling of knob. I mean, we're making it sound quite pure out of the book. You know,
there is a bit of debate though over the spelling of knob, isn't there?
Is there?
I've seen it spelled either with the K or without the K. And personally, I mean, I'm a journalist, but I don't know which is the correct way.
Well, I'm here to settle that. But there's definitely no K.
Well,
it's a definite. There's no K on it.
I mean, you know, a bed knob has a K, doesn't it?
We're not talking bed knobs.
No, we're not. But you know,
I always think it's NOB. But I don't know whether that's because the only place it's ever used really is on like a toilet wall.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever,
so and they're not known for their spelling and grammar.
No. I love that. If you take one thing away from this podcast, it is how to spell the word knob.
Yeah, can we settle that once and for all with it?
Yeah, Matt says it's NOB, everyone.
Definitely.
And if you can go around the toilet walls and do a bit of a correct, you know, take some Tippex and correct any that are misspelled, that would be really helpful.
Well, I think the thing is, if the proofreader is turning around and kicking it, that's the thing. I always thought, like, when you'd be writing books, it'd be quite a literary thing. But when the proofreader is sending these comments back and it basically says, spelling of knob, ? This is not Tolstoy, is it, really?
Well, you know.
The thing is, in the American one as well, the footnotes are, they're like a book on their own because you kind of have to explain things like what Conkers is.
Oh, really?
I don't know why.
Hang on. They don't have Conkers in America?
No. They don't even know what Conkers are.
What?
I know.
That's insane.
Why did they throw that tea into the harbour?
Yeah, exactly.
They ruined it for themselves. So they don't have Conkers. I had to explain what a wanker was. Like, I mean, although they do know what a wanker is, but there's certain people who wouldn't know, and I've had to asterisk and then explain what it is.
I guess it depends on how much British culture the reader is aware of. Yeah. You do get a lot of BBC telly over there and, you know, Downton Abbey, for example. But they're not really talking about wankers and Downton Abbey too much, are they? Or conkers.
So, I don't know how they spell knob in Downton Abbey.
Well, we should ask Hugh Bonneville. What's your take on this, Hugh?
It's very much with a K. I imagine. Hugh, you're wrong, if you're listening.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But one of the things that people seem to love about you is your no-nonsense and funny approach to parenting. I mean, do you think that there's too much kind of bullshit around the parenting thing, whether it's, you know, expert advice being given to, I think in the book you mentioned that your wife read every single book when she was pregnant. You know, there are so many books out there with people saying this is how you should give birth, this is how you should raise your baby. But then also alongside that, you've got a lot of bloggers and Instagrammers saying, you know, showing this perfect vision of family life. So do you think there's too much of that around?
I think everybody buys the same books, I think. You know, when they're first pregnant, I don't know whether it's changed now. It's changed quite a bit. I think there's been a massive wave of this sort of book where everything that sort of Dr. Spock suggested has kind of been flipped and people are being a lot more honest about that sort of thing. I think publishers have picked up on the fact that people are sick to death of being told that it should be a certain way when everybody's different, and also that side of things whereby we didn't used to talk about how tough and difficult it is. I think it's still new in terms of over the past sort of, let's say, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's still new in that respect, because we've been having babies forever, and this is kind of a new thing that you can be honest about how tough it can be.
I wonder if it is a new thing. I wonder if you've got kind of,
well, you don't know, do you, really?
Yeah.
Because this is like, it's new to me.
It's like, we think we've invented this. We invented honesty about parenting.
I just wonder whether people were saying it sort of quietly before.
I mean,
but then the mouthpiece didn't exist for it.
That's true. You know, before Instagram and Twitter and Facebook.
But you've been doing this quite a while.
I've been doing this for 6.5 years.
Right.
But I've definitely seen a change. Yeah. You know, like even when you know, just noticing the rise in bloggers like Harafra Jin and Mumsy Mum and Brummy Mummy of Two, you know, maybe about 4 years ago they started kind of coming up and gaining popularity. And it feels like since then it's been a real wave.
Yeah.
Before that, it was very much like Kath Kidson-y type motherhood. You know, perfection. And I think to begin with, I kind of bought into that, and like my Twitter bio profile pic to begin with was me holding a Kath Kidston mug, and it's like,
that's so far off brand now.
So off brand. I still do love a Kath Kidston mug, but you know, but I think that those people, and like yourself, you know, coming, you know, forward and saying, actually, you know, we've got a different take on things, has given a lot more people the confidence to say, actually, I've been thinking that for a while, but didn't perhaps have the guts to say anything. Or
it's all a little bit of a tightrope, isn't it? That you walk anyway when you put yourself out there as saying you're struggling with some element of parenthood, because I've heard you talk before about how that can easily be misconstrued as being ungrateful and stuff like that. I mean, which is of course complete bollocks, but and every other parent knows it's bollocks. But you feel that you're walking that tightrope anyway. It's different for dads as well, because being involved in the way that modern dads try to be, that's really new in terms of historically.
Yeah.
And we're still kind of finding his way and fucking it up massively. Like, I mean, but writing about that is very, very, you got to be really careful about it at times. I mean, I tend not to be, and that's why sometimes I get a bit of grief about it. But sometimes the questions that you're asked about, that try and steer you down the route of saying, yes, I'm a dad and it's very difficult for me, are designed for you to look like the kind of arsehole who's complaining about your lot in letting life as a father, when you know full well, as a dad, you know full well that mum's put up with the lion's share of everything from conception.
It's much harder for the women when it comes to conception.
I'm speaking personally for my wife. It's very, very difficult for her, the conception. But through pregnancy and birth and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So it's very difficult for you to stand there and say, oh, isn't it tough for me?
In a way, I do feel sorry for men in that respect. Because, I mean, I'm the worst person, I think, at throwing that back in my husband's face.
Like, rightly so.
I gave birth.
Yeah, you're allowed to say that right until they're like 18 or 19.
Yeah, I'm milking that.
But the thing is, an awful lot of dad bloggers, I think, they divide into two. You either get the sort of funny, amusing bloggers who try to keep it lighthearted, and then you've got the kind of like a crusading type of dad blogger.
Yeah.
And I'm quite uncomfortable with that side of it, because I don't think we're far enough into being hands-on dads to be moaning that much.
It's tricky. You know, it's really tricky, isn't it?
I mean, I take the piss about being said, the idea that, I babysit or whatever. Like, no, but it doesn't really fucking bother me, because I'd prefer to put up with that kind of stuff than actually have to produce a mewling bowling ball from my insides.
Yeah.
So it's still quite a new thing to dads.
Equally, I feel like if we are trying to move towards a more equal way of living with mum, dad, kids, as women we need to kind of cut you guys some slack a bit. I think I'm quite guilty of, giving my husband quite a hard time about stuff, but then for example, am I right in thinking that your wife went back to work?
Yeah.
You were a stay-at-home dad for a while before your son started nursery.
Yeah.
What was that like? Was that something that you felt really strongly about doing? How did that come about?
Not particularly. It just sort of, because of the book stuff and the blog stuff, it accidentally happened, because I should have gone back to work 9 to 5.
So what was your job before that?
So a graphic designer.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't the only job I'd had. I had some really shit jobs.
Oh, really?
In fact, I was just telling someone this morning about one of my jobs was I used to have to pack toilet rolls, and I was let go from that job because they'd replaced me with a machine that packed toilet rolls.
No.
And my dignity sort of rock bottom at that point. But then they offered me a job to clean the machine that packed the toilet rolls. So I'm painting a picture of how shit jobs I had before. But then I thought, I can't do shit jobs forever, so I'll go back to university, got an English degree, which I never used up until sort of 20 years later now.
Yeah.
And basically stumbled into being a graphic designer for like 10 years or whatever.
It's so cool.
I was never very good at it.
And it's really cool though these days how you can end up having like multiple careers.
Yeah.
And how kind of late 30s, early 40s you discovered.
That's very kind of you, but it's it's definite 40s.
I was being quite vague there. Late 30s, early 40s.
I suppose it is. There's a lack of security with doing the job that I do now. You doing the job that you do now.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's certainly the only job I've ever actually liked. I don't like working. I think working's shite.
But
I hate it.
This doesn't class as work. I mean, you were sitting here having a chat, and it's class as work for both of us. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know how we're getting away.
Yeah. Let's just keep you know, we're winging it. Let's just keep going. No one will notice. So your wife went back to work, and there's that amazing post I think you've got pinned on your Facebook page, which was the text conversations between you and your wife on her first day back at work, was it?
That was, yeah. And I was stuck at home.
Stuck at home with the baby.
But because you get accustomed in those early days, have you all been there? Do you know what I mean? The first sort of three or four months, you're kind of used to, they're kind of like, everybody comes around to visit for a start. So you have like extended family knocking around. Like,
yeah.
Me and Lindsay were both at home at the same time. So everything was shared equally. And then the day that she just set off, I just thought, what am I going to do? I honestly thought, if I get to 5 o'clock and he's still alive and I'm still alive, then that's a win.
Yeah, you're winning. So how old was he then? When
so he was probably about 9 months, something
nine
like
months.
That. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, they're kind of, they're not at their most fun at 9 months old, are they?
No.
You know, quite often they're maybe toddling about or cruising about.
No, he wasn't doing any of
that. Was he not doing any of that?
He didn't start humping the floor until he was about 18 months. I didn't start walking until I was about 3 or something. So,
really?
Yeah. So he's a bit like me. He's kind of lazy.
Quite happy being stationary.
That's it.
But what I mean is, they're not the most exciting people to hang out with at that age.
No, really, really boring.
And so you must have had that exact feeling that most mums get when their partners go back to work and you're suddenly left there with this kind of baby that's doing nothing, giving nothing back, and you're like, oh, what are we going to do now then?
Especially because I'm supposed to be writing a book at the same time and he's not doing anything.
You know, I mean, give me material.
I've got 80,000 words here. Like, it's like, you know, when you find a jellyfish on the beach with a stick,
you're prodding him.
Make him do stuff because I've got 80,000 words to do and you're ruining it.
So when you have a nightmare day, like if you have an awful day, do you think in the back of your head, well, at least this is material for the book or the blog or the Facebook page?
I should do, really. That'd be a good way of writing the thing. But no, not really. I don't really even make notes. I kind of sit down and think, right, I need to write 2,000 words today, and then I'll just try and remember what happened in the past couple of weeks. But I didn't really have those. There weren't nightmare days in that way, really. I knew that Lindsay would be coming home, and that's how I always sort of think. I used to watch the clock. You know what I mean? And did that sound miserable? You know,
well, I was the same. I mean, I used to watch the clock and just, you know, count down. This is so pathetic, but I remember Alan Titchmarsh was my best friend because at 5 o'clock every day the Alan Titchmarsh show would come on ITV, and I knew that when Alan came on the box, it wasn't long until my husband walked in the door. So I was just like, Alan, I love you, Alan.
I like the fact that you were born, you sort of like a celebrated Alan coming on an hour before rather than your husband actually coming
home. Yeah, Alan got all the love.
But Alan got the, you wasted the surprise on Alan, you know what I mean?
Yeah, when my husband actually walked through the door, I just thrust the baby at him and headed off to the bath for half an hour. That's all he got.
Man, if you'd have just worn an Alan mask, the kind of joy you could have had in
I would
life.
Have hugged you. Yeah. So you're not a stay-at-home dad anymore. You're busy working on your book and your blog. And are you writing another book now? Are you working on a second book?
Yeah. So it was two-book deal in the first place. So
hang on. Based on that one Facebook post, you were given a two-book deal.
I know. It's ridiculous. Like I said, they don't know what they're doing. I feel. Do you know when you go to these book things, when your publisher puts, you know, there's like a book launch.
I don't know. I've never been to.
Yes, you have. You're going to one tonight, in fact. Right. So when they do those book launches or whatever, there's like proper writers. Those people have like grafted 20 years. They've honed the manuscript. They've made it right. Like, I mean, I can't tell them that it was just a bloody Facebook post. You feel like I write.
Do you get imposter syndrome about it?
I just lie.
Really?
Been grafting. Yeah, I did an English degree 20 years ago and I've been grafting away ever since. I just don't tell the truth.
That is true. I mean
it's sort of, I was grafting at something else.
Yes.
But
you were grafting at packing toilet rolls. Yeah. All kinds.
I don't mention that, obviously. Like,
no, absolutely. So is your next book about going to be about the toddler stage, or
Man versus Toddler in theory. Yeah, I think we settled on the title, I think, yesterday, so it'll probably be Man versus Toddler.
Excellent.
Which is, because Charlie's only sort of 2.5, I feel like we're only kind of just into sort of toddler. I don't know when they become a toddler, that's the problem.
It's like the lines are blurred. I mean, I've got a friend who, her child was practically at school and she was still calling him the toddler. And I was like, he's not a toddler anymore. It's that same thing of like clinging on to the baby day. She was clinging on to the toddler, his toddler days.
Yeah, I don't know what makes a toddler, which is not a good starting point for writing a book about toddlers.
Yes, you do some research. Yeah. It's all just a bit, it's quite fluid, isn't it? I think as long as they're toddling about, and I think maybe when they get to about 3, 3.5, they become a preschooler.
Right, is that what the next thing is?
Yeah, I mean, it's all just a load of rubbish, really, isn't it? They're just children.
They are just children. Although I just talked to someone this morning who was saying that that I should have like Charlie booked into school and that already.
Oh, have you not?
Have you not got a tutor
for his 11 plus sorted yet?
They were saying. Admittedly, it was like St. John's Wood area kind of thing.
Oh, right.
I mean,
yes.
So like nurseries or whatever. You have to put your name down while you're pregnant or whatever for a school. And they were talking about how you choose a nursery and saying about how, you know, I mean, language tutors and you know, you go around and visit and all that stuff.
At the nursery?
We chose our nursery because it had a horse. See, we went and it had a horse and Charlie went, horse. So we went there.
Job done. I chose our nursery because it was on the way to the train station that I had to get to on my way into work. And it was the one that I looked around. It looked all right. So that was it.
Well, we did turn down one nurse. I said turn down. They weren't clamouring for us.
All the offers you were getting. Yeah.
But we did sort of not send him to one nursery. But that was because we had to change him while we were looking around and went into the area whereby you pull down the nappy changing table. And my God.
It's like
food in the hinges and stuff, like, you know, like an oven door.
You'd expect that in, like, I don't know, McDonald's or something, but not in a nursery.
Plus, the telly was on all the time. Like, I mean, we fulfil his telly time at home.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, I'm really glad that Jamie Oliver did that whole campaign about school dinners being healthy, because now it means I can feed my daughter chicken nuggets at home, knowing that she gets a healthy school lunch. So thanks, Jamie. Yeah. Really appreciate that. And you've got a section in your book about judgment. Have you ever felt judged as a dad, whether that's a stay-at-home dad or putting, you know, what you put out into the world?
You do. It goes back to trolls. I mean, the people come back and say, I get a lot of stuff about being too old to be a dad. I get quite a bit
of that.
No, I get quite... That's probably the number one, because I'm like 43 now. And in fact, I had one from a woman who claimed to be a teacher. I'm not entirely sure, because she said that it's wrong to have had a baby at my age, because as a primary school teacher, she'd seen children lose their parents and had to struggle with the loss.
She knows you're 43, not 83, right?
basically, if I lived to the average age, which is like 83 or whatever, then Charlie will be like 40-odd by the time if he's still in primary school at 40-odd, he's got bigger problems than me carking it. So yeah, I don't think she was like a maths teacher or anything.
That's so weird,
but
though.
But quite a bit of that.
43 is not old to be having babies, like, you know, in this day and age.
No,
it might have been 30 years ago.
No, I think the average age has progressed up through the 30s over the past.
You know why?
Years,
these bloody women are all having careers.
What the
before
bloody...
they want to have babies. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. I get quite a bit of that, and I get quite a bit of, I'm trying to think what other grief I get. I mean, I get grief about sharing stuff about your kids online, which I think is actually a bit overblown.
What kind of stuff? Do you mean like stuff about your own son? Or?
Yeah, that you should share that sort of stuff. And they'll, you know, there'll come a point naturally when I don't, when it's not particularly because I think that there's a massive problem with it, but just because I think there'll come a point whereby it's his story rather than mine, and it'll just naturally progress away from it. Probably once this book's out, I'll probably move away and do something else.
Oh, that's you say that, and then the book offer will come in for Man versus Preschooler.
I know,
and you'll think,
yeah. let's talk cash.
Yes.
How much is my child worth?
Yes, exactly. And were there any rumours of a TV show being made out of the book?
Yeah, we had. I signed a contract with Sony and CBS about turning it into like a TV, that's kicked into the long grass until it comes out in America, I think.
And kicked into the long grass.
See what happens.
That sounds like such cool media jargon.
No, I must have heard that from some... Because, you know, they phone you, like LA agents or whatever.
I don't know. I've never been called by an LA agent.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, all the time.
neither have I. But they phone and they phone at really inconvenient times because the time difference. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, they'll phone our house. And they'll phone to Barnsley or whatever. And they're, hi, Matt. I can't do an American accent.
Hi, Matt.
You're
that
a real doll and all that sort of stuff. And, they blow loads of smoke up your ass. Mm. And then they tell you that it's going to be fantastic. And they'll say, because Ashton Kutcher's quoted on the book as, said, does something nice about it. And
Ashton Kutcher shared your original Facebook post.
I did, yeah. And so we talk to these agents out there and they're like, oh, no, I know Ashton, we'll get Ashton. I don't know. They've never met Ashton, which I have never met Ashton, but it's nice, you know what I mean. But you got to keep your.
That must be such a weird way to live, though, is to be so enthusiastic and nice to someone, and then have to tell them actually we're kicking this into the long grass. Actually, we're not quite as keen on you as we thought, or we're waiting for the book to come out.
Yeah,
that's kind of like a weird person.
I imagine they just do it every day, though. But it's.
So it's been kicked into the long grass.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's not happening. It just means that they're going to, I guess, see how well the book does in America. Are they?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know,
so fingers crossed it does all right over there, and then they've got rights to develop it if they want to. You know,
but even the fact that you have had interest from an American network,
yeah, it's lovely. It's lovely.
It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to write it myself, to be honest.
Right.
So there's part of me that hopes they don't do anything with it, and they give us back the rights, and I can just do it myself.
Yeah.
Because I think the idea of Americanizing it makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But
who do you reckon they would get to play you?
I mean, Ashton Kutcher's got the cheekbones and he's got the six pack.
I was going to say, you guys you're quite similar looking.
Twinny. but any sort of like middle-aged dumpling. I don't know. It'd be.
I can't believe you haven't thought about this.
Well, I haven't actually, but it didn't occur to me that they wouldn't change it so much that it wouldn't be me in it. But when it got quite advanced in that talk, whatever, they were literally using my name and everything. That's when I got really twitchy. I thought, oh, I'm not happy about doing this at all. But yeah, any sort of like, it needs to be kind of like a happy go loser type.
Happy go loser.
That's me, basically.
I think Ashton Kutcher would be pretty good, actually. Okay, so I've got some quick fire questions for you, Matt.
Oh God,
if that's good. NCT or NWA?
NCT or NWA? NWA.
NWA.
All day long.
Yeah. Were you a dummy baby or were you a thumb sucker when you were a nipper?
Thumb sucker I was, yeah. And I also sucked a blanket as well.
Did you?
Yeah, stuck it in my nose.
Because on the cover of the book, you've got a dummy in your mouth, haven't you?
Yes, yeah.
What was the thinking behind calling it the book Dummy?
You'd have to ask publishers, really. I wanted to call it Man vs. Baby, but I think because the balanced readership was weighted towards mums, I think they were worried about it sounding a bit masculine, maybe.
Right.
So,
I get that.
Yeah.
Okay, what's been your best troll comment ever?
Probably on the first post, which was, in fact, Lynn's never reads anything that I'm our missus. She never reads anything that I write. She's still not even read the book.
Has she not?
No, she's no interest. in that first post, I came into the living room one day and she was laughing, like uncontrollably laughing. And I thought, oh, I must have written something that she really, really resonated and she's found really amusing. And she wasn't. She was reading the comments. And one of the comments was, what was it? You look like a fat fucking David Tennant.
Oh my goodness, you do!
So that's what she was laughing at.
That's who needs to play you in the film, in the TV series.
Yes. We should have him.
He's pretty good at accents, so he could do an American accent.
Yeah.
I know you're Northern, but I'm guessing in America they will make it have to be American.
So that's the best troll comment I've got because it got a reaction out of my missus.
I love that. Yeah. Okay, what's been your most embarrassing parenting moment ever?
Oh, Christ, how long have you got? How
you
long
must have loads.
I've got so many. Given what we're doing, one of the this is not a parenting moment, but I did, when this first kicked off the viral stuff, I had to do an interview for a parenting magazine, and they and one of the first questions they asked was what's worst case scenario, what's the worst thing, and completely innocently I said probably eating a being watched whilst I'm eating a cream egg, because it's like you know, watching a dog while it's having a shit. Nice. Nobody really wants to. And they went, no, we mean about parenting. So, right, you could probably leave that bit out. And they said, yeah, we will.
That is so random. But that's so true, because it's impossible to eat a cream egg in a cool way.
Yeah, or a banana. But it's mainly cream eggs.
Cream eggs are definitely worse than bananas.
Yeah, so I wasn't really equipped to deal with those sorts of questions at the time. I was quite tired as well, like, don't we? But there's absolutely loads and loads. The worst one I mentioned a couple of weeks on something else. It was soft play. I'm writing about soft play at the minute, and a couple of the stories I've included in that are just horrible to relive. It's like I get post-traumatic stress disorder just write about it. I had one whereby you know, in soft play where they do like four floors of soft play.
Yeah, four floors of hell, you mean?
That's the one, yeah. And it was like a jungle jamboree type thing, and there was a snake slide that went all the way to the top, like four floors up. And me and Charlie sort of, because I'm one of those parents who kind of like follows him through. I don't leave him to it. I have to be there.
Do you know what? In a couple of years, you're going to be there having a cup of tea.
Yeah, we'll just sling him over.
And a newspaper, watching him going around on his own. That's when you know you've made it.
But at the moment, I'm just too terrified about him, because he's quite suicidal in these places. But he, so we made his way all the way to the top. And the slide at the top had a little note on it, like a laminated sign that said, no adults allowed down the slide. And he was too young to go down on his own, because obviously I was to the rest. So I thought, screw the sign. No, you know, no one's telling this dad what to do.
Yeah, even though you're a fat David Tennant, I'm still going to go down the snake slide.
I thought, screw jungle jamboree officials. I'm going down this slide. So I put Charlie on my knee, went down the slide. It was fine. A little bit quicker than I was expecting. You know, a little bit nervy. But I went all the way down into the bottom, came out in a ball pit. Everything's fine in a ball pool. And then looked around, and I noticed it was only 10 metres by 10 metres, this ball pool. And there was, like, no way out, apart from, like, a small hatch. You know, like a flap that a toddler can fit through, but an adult can't.
That's why
Yeah, and I'm stuck in a ball pool. And literally, I thought I was going to die. You know, you have irrational panic at that moment. I just thought, I'm going to die in here. I don't know how I'm going to get out.
Did you have more children coming down the slide behind you?
Well, fortunately, it was empty.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, we'd just filled up behind me. But I thought about, because Charlie could fit through it, so I thought about sending him to the counter, you know, like Lassie, getting to bark at the counter and sort of tell him that his master was trapped. But do you know what I had to do? I had to phone Jungle Jamboree on my mobile.
So you had your phone on you?
Yeah. So I had to phone him and say, If you look to your left, the woman picked up behind the cafe counter. If you look to your left, there's someone waving at you, and that's me. I'm stuck in your ball pool.
What did she say?
Well, we had quite a long conversation whereby she didn't seem to believe me to begin with. Like, I mean, but if,
that'd be quite a cool hoax phone call to make, though. You just do that tomorrow. Just ring up and just, you know, replay that conversation.
I can't do it at the same place. But she said, did you not notice the sign at the top of the slide? I said, do you think if I'd noticed the slide, I'd have come down the slide? I don't think so. I'm not an idiot. So, but in all seriousness, they had to cut me out of the ball pool. You know, they have cable ties on the side that hold the sign. They had to take down a wall to get me out there. And there was a guy filming me getting out. That was my biggest terror leaving the place, was that this would appear on YouTube. Look at this idiot.
Yeah.
Got trapped in a ball pool.
And all your trolls would have been like vindicated.
I love that. But that sort of stuff just happens all the time.
Oh, my goodness. Do you know what? That's probably one of the best. I ask this question a lot on the podcast. I should have a chart, like on Top Gear or Saturday Kitchen.
Yeah.
I think you'd be at the top,
really?
I think you would.
Slap it on the top.
Yeah, brilliant. Listen, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
It's really been delightful to chat to you, and I have laughed a lot, so thank you very much.
Bless you. Thank you, Alison.
I don't think it's going to be possible for me to go to a soft play and not think about that story. Thank you again to Matt for being my guest, and thank you for tuning in. Please pop over to iTunes and subscribe and review and rate the podcast, and I'll catch up with you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.